forget the first moment when I walked into a cinema. I was hooked from there on.
Hello and welcome to the 10th Scan On podcast. I'm stepping in for Niall, I'm Darren, and joining me are...
Graham.
Grace.
And we're here to talk about the week in Irish film. So let's begin with our usual round of what we watched this week. So let's start with Grace. What did you watch this week?
Right, I saw two films this week. So last Friday I finally watched Baby Driver, which is not a new film. I'm still playing catch up with 2017. It was not very good, and I don't have much more to say on that. Then on Sunday... it was just a weird kind of boomerang of styles and influences, none of which really worked for me. Didn't really like the lead actor, whose name...
Ansel Elgort, who is surprisingly not a character in Lord of the Rings.
Yes, indeed. I feel like if you had someone else in that role who was a bit more charismatic, maybe they would have sold it a bit more, but he wasn't really doing it for
me. So I'm excited for the sequel.
There's going to be a sequel.
But it was one of the rare original inverted commas successes of last year. And I mean, I would argue the style justifies enough, but the editing, the sound mixing, you know, the mixtape is fantastic. But yes.
It's just very uninvolving, I found. But anyway.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen Baby Driver?
No, no. There's only so many films in a week that I can...
We'll talk about this. Graham is, of the bunch of us, the one who actually does film reviewing properly. He has seen...
He gets to meet famous people.
Yeah, and he's seen like 20 films this week. It's great. This week, there's a good chance that somebody on this podcast will have seen all of the top 10 and all the new releases.
Have you seen The Greatest Showman, though?
We're still out.
I could bring my friend Kate. She adores that film.
Grace, what was the other film you watched?
The second film was Annihilation on Netflix.
Yay!
I liked a lot, but not perhaps as much as a lot of other people seem to.
I think that's the thing. Everyone's like, I liked it, but then not completely.
It was very enjoyable. It was beautifully made. I thought the story was well told enough and just the right level of, I suppose, implication and suggestion without really spoon-feeding you anything. Characters were a little thin.
Aww.
I don't think that really worked for me. But it was very refreshing to see a sci-fi or soft sci-fi film, I suppose, that is populated almost entirely by female characters.
That's Alex Garland, isn't it?
Yeah.
Soft sci-fi from Alex Garland.
It's soft sci-fi in the style that Stalker is soft sci-fi. It's Stalker with machine guns. It's Stalker meets Alien. I quite liked it. I thought it was really good allegorical sci-fi, and that it was a really great metaphor for... I think Angelica Jade Bastien of Vulture compared it to dealing with depression, which I can see in there. Mm-hmm. But for me, it was a much better metaphor for the idea of living being a process of change and evolution, and how as long as we're not dying, we're changing. And I thought
that's nice.
Yeah.
Thought it worked very well.
No, some of the concepts therein were really quite thought provoking.
I heard the ending doesn't quite land.
I don't think the ending landed, and it wasn't necessarily because I don't think it's a frustrating ending to the story. It just lacks a certain oomph, perhaps, that you would expect with an ending. It doesn't feel very climactic. At least that was my take on it. I thought the themes were quite nice, and the construction of the world inside the Shimmer, without going into anything spoilery, was very filmy of The Hunger Games. Can't figure out if it's a good thing or a bad thing.
Which part of The Hunger Games is the question?
Something, I'm not sure if this was ever in The Hunger Games films, but it was in The Hunger Games books about people who have died in the games, their voices and facial features being...
Oh, echoing or whatever.
Yeah, that sort of thing. That reminded me of The Hunger
Games. I think that's a
nice
film.
Oh, it is.
In our house.
Locked away?
I say locked away. She's got
recovering.
Pneumonia. She's recovering from pneumonia.
Recovering.
So she's never seen, Highlander.
Yeah. Graham doesn't live in an 18th century gothic novel, just so we're clear on this. Yeah.
Her hair isn't nearly that long. We watched Highlander. There can be only one. It's aged not that well.
But it was always very 80s, right down to the Queen soundtrack.
Reed had no idea what was going on. I was like, I thought they were set in Scotland when it opens up in a wrestling match. I was like, what's going on? I was like, there could be only one Reed. She was like, that's where that line comes from? I was like, that is where the line comes from.
It gets even better, though, when you have Sean Connery, Scottish, in a film that's set primarily in Scotland, playing
an Egyptian. The weirdest thing is when he's asking about haggis from a guy who's playing a Scottish man who is clearly French.
This is like in Braveheart when there's one of the relatively few Scottish actors playing an Irish guy in a show.
Or the fact that Brendan Gleeson's playing Scottish.
Yeah. It's like,
Swap them over.
She adored it, actually. And what was really funny was afterwards was showing her the trailers for the sequels.
I was going to say, did you put her through the quickening?
No, I did not show her. I showed her the trailers, and that's as far as we went.
She's already sick.
She saw the best it'll ever get.
So much.
I told her about the TV show. She was quite interested that there's another McLeod. I mean, she adored the film.
It's a budget-friendly McLeod.
Yes. Hey, Connor shows up with Duncan.
Every McLeod has a silver lining.
And then watched Paddington 2.
Paddington 2.
You know this.
I know this, but now you're giving me a chance to poke you.
Oh, no, right.
But yeah, it is, and it's got that great performance from Hugh Grant, and it's just got this warm like quality that runs through it, this sort of warmth and like... It came
Hugh
out
Grant's
of
amazing in Godfather. Oh, wait, no, sorry, we're talking about Paddington 2 again. Hugh Grant is maybe the best he's ever been.
They did
my
the
opinion.
One with Mickey Blue Eyes with James Caan in the 90s.
I have not seen that.
It was in like that big pool of like forgotten Hugh Grant movies with like Extreme Measures with Gene Hackman. But this one was like he stumbles into the mob. This was before Analyze This, Analyze That. He stumbles into the mob. I think it's maybe his girlfriend's father is a mafia don, and he ends up having to like impersonate.
Is it Andy McDowell again?
I don't think it's Andy McDowell again. But he ends up having to impersonate with James Caan sort of guiding him through it. And it's stereotypical Hugh Grant stuff, which I've warmed to in my later years.
Just so charmingly awkward.
I'm getting older. Yeah, I'm getting
older.
He's
less awkward now as he's gotten older. Like, he's... Like, in Paddington 2, he is wonderful. He's sending himself up, and it's...
Well, I mean, even Paddington...
Man from Uncle, he's brilliant in.
Yes, Man from Uncle also.
The film itself, on the other hand...
Man from Uncle is amazing!
I
think Man from Uncle.
I do too. It is such a charming film, and it's what James Bond needs to be again.
Yes, precisely.
Yeah.
Charming.
Yeah.
Less problematic.
And with Henry Cavill as James Bond. Sorry.
You can dream. You can dream, Graham.
I can. Uh-huh. He was going to be at one point until Daniel Craig took the role.
Yes, a lot of people were going to be James Bond before Daniel Craig took the role.
Right. What did you see?
Okay, fine. If we're going to do this.
Hating on my Henry Cavill.
I watched a rewatch and a new watch. So I rewatched... this is going to be fantastic. The movie's going to show us how he gets back. The movie's going to, you know, it's going to give us all the characters. It's going to take us back to the small town.
Mind.
Yeah, it's going to give us everything that we think we want from a Twin Peaks film. And then what Fire Walk With Me does is it says, no. It's not going to be a sequel. It's not going to pick up from the cliffhanger. Instead, it's going to be a prequel. It's going to focus on what happened leading up to the
series.
That's
just mean.
It's not going to spend any time or that much time in Twin Peaks, the town that you love and have spent 2 years in. It's instead going to spend 35 minutes in a town just across the river from it that you've never heard. But let's not talk qualitatively. But no, and they're not. They're also not in the same league as Fire Walk With Me. But what Fire Walk With Me does brilliantly is it combines the two extremes. It has David Lynch doing his abstract weirdism that he could never get away with on television. So it has, for example, a lot more violence, has a lot more surrealism. There's this recurring motif of static television static coming through. But it also gets right to the heart of what Twin Peaks is, which is the story of this exploitation of this young girl by this community and the way in which society protected her or more of what fans didn't want from the film. And it's fascinating because, well, it's also very touching because this was released in 2014, right?
Yeah.
And by that stage, many of the people who had appeared in the film, and many of the people who had passed away and been cut from the film, like so Don S. Davies, for example, or Jack Nance, his films are generally accessible. They're just surreal in
nature. The only thing that I can think of, my connection with David Lynch, is one, I've seen Dune, haven't seen it in years, and that
episode... Price, who is a militant IRA activist, hunger striker, and dissident Republican, who 2 years before she died gave a film interview on conditions it would not be broadcast in her lifetime.
Interesting.
That looks interesting. I mean, we've seen a lot of documentaries.
Yeah.
We've
seen a lot of films, like, was it Prison? The one with Tom Von Lahr?
Oh, Maze.
Maze, excuse me.
Yeah, well, I mean,
that's another type of... Well, I think not a documentary, but...
Home video releases.
Please go home.
But, yeah, please go home and watch this. And then, on the other hand, the final documentary is Smithy and Dickie, which is an opener to Dreaming Murakami. It's a charming documentary which celebrates old love letters that have stood the test of time while questioning how the current digital age is potentially obliterating any record of our most precious moments. So it's a...
Dare they? I'm sure Plenty of Fish keeps an archive.
Listen, we have the cloud.
I mean, we do also have the cloud. Like, everything that you've written on Facebook will be preserved until the dawn of time and used against
you. And still
you.
Used to sell ads.
Yeah.
Or win US elections, as the past week showed.
It's a hot topic.
Yeah, it is indeed a hot topic for hot dogs.
I don't know, lads. I don't think the old days were that romantic, really. People were, like, dying and lived in squalid conditions and probably smelled horrible. So, like, sure, they had love letters. But did they have hygiene?
I like Grace's pros and cons comment for the video. No, I think you have a very fair point, and particularly with regards to modern pop culture and the way modern pop culture venerates the old and the past. I mean, even, like, make America great again, or the weird pull towards empire you see in the Brexit campaign. But even like pop culture, which seems increasingly saturated with nostalgia and yearning for a past that never actually existed. I do think that there is something to be said for questioning and evaluating our relationship with the past and what the past was actually like for
people. But just not looking at it
like Kylo Ren says, like the great Kylo Ren says, forget the past, burn it, destroy it if you have to.
He was the villain in that film, Grace.
Was he?
Yes. Also,
what was he?
Let's be clear about this. And then also, in other Irish film news this week, principal photography began on Sophie Hyde's Animals, starring Ali...
The plot of this sounds somewhat similar to Frances.
Also, she looks super weird.
Which one?
Sorry, because I only know her as Maybe.
Who?
From Arrested Development.
Which one? Alia Shawkat or Holiday Granger? Okay, Alia? Alia Shawkat, right? Alia Shawkat.
No.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, cool.
Oh, I definitely... Okay, I know Holiday Granger.
Well, Shawkat's obviously in... What's the name of that TV? Broad City? She's
is
doing
she?
It at the moment. I thought she was in Broad City.
I'm
fairly certain that's Maybe out of Arrested Development.
What, that picture?
Maybe Bluth.
Oh, no, I'm fairly sure it is as well. Like, Shawkat's done a whole range of things. Like, she's, for example, wasn't she in that... one that had all the comedians in it about searching for somebody. Can't remember what it was. There's just so much television.
Yeah, I think
I
she was.
Honestly keep
yeah,
track
I think
of
she
it.
Was.
It's like
the last thing I think I remember seeing her in was Green Room.
Oh,
she was. She was very good in Green Room, and she also popped up in one of those awful Christmas movies with Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Seth Rogen and Anthony Mackie. What was it called?
Yes,
I love this. This is what the Scan On podcast turns into when Niall's not here. It's
recently.
Like, guess the movie from Darren's vague memory.
No, I do know what you mean. They also had Anthony Mackie, Michael Shannon in a career-turning role.
No. But yeah, so it basically... but you know the film. Talk about
it.
But yeah, so...
we'll just add these in notes.
Yeah, we'll just add them in
post. Thanks, Niall.
But Alia Shawkat and Holiday Granger are starring in Sophia Hyde's Irish-Australian co-production Animals. They'll star as Laura and Tyler, respectively, best friends and drinking buddies, whose hedonistic experience falls under the creeping horror of adulthood when Laura gets engaged to Jim, an ambitious pianist who decides unfathomably to go teetotal. So yeah, there are certainly shades
What's adulthood? Like, how old are they?
But, again, this
people's
is...
Interpretations
of adulthood these days is... Oh yeah. No, they're in their mid-30s.
I have people my age who are married with houses and kids, and then there's, like, the rest of us.
Yeah. Like, friend, I'll put in quotations. He's 37, and he acts less mature than I do, and that's saying a lot.
Well, I mean, yeah, and again, this is another one of those. Let's go off on a tangent about
maybe
pop culture
things. Perceptions of adulthood. If you need to be an upstanding, responsible person who doesn't fall in the door drunk at 4 a.m. type of thing,
like train wreck, basically. Yeah.
And yet, most adults I know are desperate for at least a brief return to those days.
Yeah, so, I mean, actually, yeah, I thought
that's what Niall's doing tonight. Going to Bellex One.
It's recapturing that lost youth.
My housemate's also going to Bellex One. Also in her late 30s. Do I sense a trend?
Yeah, is there something happening? Whereas all the cool people who are in their late 20s, early 30s are recording
sitting
podcasts.
Sitting in an empty room.
Recording podcasts about the top 10 films of the week.
An empty room that usually has people laughing. Celebrating events.
I'm so
like creepy laughter.
I'm so glad that we invited you on.
You're in a haunted room.
Graham is just a constant source
stuff
of joy. You have seen some stuff today. But yeah, so then we'll move on to talking about the top 10. And at number 10, still hanging on in there, it's the second last of the Best Picture nominees hanging on there. It's Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
I have not seen that.
Which is at 10. Controversial and divisive film that it is. Interestingly enough, the only one of the Best Picture nominees still listed in the IMDb's top 250 movies of all time.
Grim.
This year.
Wow.
Yeah.
A further indictment of the IMDb top 250.
At number 9, which didn't make either the IMDb 250 or the Best Picture nominations, it's I, Tonya.
Ah.
Which, you've seen it?
Oh, yeah.
What's your
name? Oh, you really enjoyed it. It's like, it's ridiculous.
It's the Goodfellas of figure skating, they put in the advertisement. It's very Scorsese influence.
Yeah, it's super. How the characters act, the fact that they break the fourth wall like at the drop of a hat. Sebastian Stan's good in it. I'm surprised he can do anything other than brooding.
Take that, Sebastian Stan.
When was the last time you saw him in anything that didn't do...
He did The Bronze.
What is that?
The Bronze is another
another movie where he supports... Another dramedy in which he supports a failed athlete.
Like Steve Rogers?
I don't think you can classify Captain America fitting in...
He doesn't entirely brood in Civil War.
Oh, he does. When he says to Steve, "Am I worth it? Am I worth all of this trouble?" He's like, yeah,
"I keep
man,
a picture
you
of
are.
You in my diary, Steve. It's totally
in this locket around my
Every time I'm frozen, it's right there.
I just wanted to buy some plums, maybe make a pie, maybe some jam.
Oh wow,
it's like Labor Day, but with the man with the metal arm.
I am all on board with this.
Thank you very much for that. At number 8, come on, you know which one this is. This will outlast any of us. It's The Greatest Showman. Now, Graham is a first-time guest on this podcast.
The world is a smoking husk. Yeah. There will still be a Cineplex somewhere.
I'm surprised it's still there.
Yeah.
Is it that... I'm genuinely surprised it's still there.
It's an event. It's a phenomenon. It's done amazingly well.
It's like a cult movie in real time.
And yet it tells a fictionalized version of a story about a guy who did... abuse his power over the less franchise.
Oh yeah, well it's very much a Hollywood fairy tale. I mean, like it's been
already.
They're
singing and yeah, a lot but of people like
and
that.
Hugh Jackman.
It's worrying when Legends of Tomorrow get the story of P.T. Barnum more correct than a film with Hugh Jackman in it.
Yeah.
And like in Legends of Tomorrow, they cast Billy Zane as him. I know, right?
Legasse.
And he's a jerk.
So he's Billy Zane.
He's Billy Zane.
But anyway, sorry, Billy Zane. We like you.
Man, you're
like
as bad
a perfectly
as
upstanding
citizen. But yeah, no, I mean, this is the argument about Greatest Showman. And in fact, one of the arguments about Greatest Showman is that critics, perhaps, may have been too harsh and too dismissive of it when it premiered, in large part because they were concerned about little things like truth, honesty, and like relevance to the real P.T. Barnum.
My friend adores this film, adores that song.
And
we all know it's
so... it as well.
Yeah.
Everybody loves it.
And then I told her about the truth of him. And she's like, that's not true. I was like, look it up. she actually got really worried. She's like, he was mean. He's like, he used these people to make himself rich.
That makes it sound like you're trying to speak to a child. Like, I thought he was mean.
Oh no, like, I said much harsher words. But on Scon on podcast, I don't know how much my language can evolve.
But I like the idea that like P.T. Barnum was mean. It's like he refused to top up the sugar in like the company kitchen.
Yeah. Like I'm surprised Hugh Jackman
didn't put a wet spoon into it.
I'm surprised Hugh Jackman actually went along with this. It was just like the script is just so dripping with charm.
Well, it is. Well, this was Hugh Jackman's passion project. It survived the departure of several directors and got made through apparently sheer force of will on the part of Hugh Jackman. And good for him.
After 18 years of playing Wolverine, yeah. Like, I just want to break.
I just want to sing.
I just want to sing.
Yeah, we can't all be Viva Lachlan, the famous US musical TV series starring Hugh Jackman that nobody has ever seen.
Hugh Jackman has.
Several times.
We watched every single bit of it.
There's a room in his mansion that before the release of The Greatest Showman just showed the 8 episodes of Viva Lachlan on loop.
Just sits there with a little glass of whiskey.
Think one day they'll appreciate it. No, we're very happy for you, Jackman. At number 7.
He needs it.
At number 7, it's Mary Magdalene, which is an interesting new entry. It was a very surprising choice for Universal. This famously was supposed to premiere during ADIF on the Wednesday night until the Beast
until
in the
Snowmageddon.
East.
Oh, God, I love Snowmageddon.
Joaquin Phoenix. What?
I loved it.
What?
Oh, I loved it. I'm a video gamer. I loved the fact that I had to stay in.
It just locked you in a room for, with a TV screen. Yeah. Well, you know who else it locked in a room? Yeah. Rooney Mara and Joaquin Phoenix. So they couldn't attend the premiere. They had to call it off, which was very sad. The film didn't really get a great push as a result of that, interesting enough. There was a Women in Film and Television premiere the day before it was released, but it seems to have arrived with very little buzz, which is surprising, given Universal's decision to open it wider than Lady Bird.
Really?
Which means that it had the lowest, I think, per screen average of a major release this week.
Distribution decisions frequently astound me.
Also, I don't know if anyone saw it, Universal had a Pacific Rim Uprising trailer on Twitter, which they promoted, and instead of using the Pacific Rim Uprising trailer, they used the Pope. The Pope film, you know, the new Pope film that's coming out that Universal are distributing.
No.
Yeah, there's one. It's all about Pope Francis. It's a new film. It's all about like how it's how you know it's a new religion. It's a new church, and it said so. Basically, it was getting it retweeted all over the place, going, "So this is Pope Pacific Rim."
Oh, I like it.
It's just like Universal might want to get onto this because.
But you
really ruined it.
You were saying you've seen Mary Magdalene.
I've seen it. I adored it.
You adored it.
I'm very effusive. I really liked it. Rooney Mara is fantastic in it. She has just a sheer force of will in it that just completely wins you over.
How does it work as a revisionist Bible story? Because obviously it's a story of Mary Magdalene who was famously squeezed out of the 12 apostles by Peter when he's established the
you
church.
You see all that.
What?
You see all
so it actually does explore the way in which...
it explores the entire thing.
The way in which the Catholic Church basically became systemically misogynistic as a result of its treatment of women, which is interesting.
They do it in a subtle way. It happens towards the end of the film.
Okay, because I was wondering how you balance that, because it seems like it looks like a faith blockbuster.
Also, the first film I've ever seen where Jesus is called a rabbi. First film I've ever seen, and he's called it multiple times. They don't call him Jesus a lot. They call him the rabbi. Multiple times, like obviously the apostles call him Jesus every now
Church
and then.
Church types aren't going to like this.
It's interesting, and it's an interesting film.
It's like those Fox News people who react when Jesus is shown with dark skin.
It's an interesting film, especially from a cinematic point of view, because it's the cinematography at times is just gorgeous. Like the opening shot with Mary underwater in what seems like this endless void of water is just beautiful. It takes you in from the word go. I really enjoyed it.
Cool.
I did not expect to.
At number six, another new entry and an Irish film for St. Patrick's weekend, Damo and Ivor, the movie.
I am super proud to say I did not see this.
I saw this.
I avoided it like the plague.
I saw this and you made a good call. It's just tired.
News Talk, the movie.
Yeah, it's News very
talk.
Much... Well, Ivor is very... like they're both stereotypes. And they're both stereotypes who've been played by Andy Quirk since he was God knows how young. And interestingly enough, Damo, who is the North Sider archetype, is vaguely more interesting because he's actually got an arc and a character and a persona. Whereas Ivor, on the other hand, is like watching stuff that Russell Carroll Kelly was doing 20 years ago as if it's like a revelation.
How's Jonjo?
Jonjo is horribly offensive and very ill-judged in a number of different ways. Interestingly enough, this got an IFCO warning for racial stereotypes.
Which
is
I saw
not
that.
Surprising.
Interesting.
Also, it was funded by the Irish Film Board.
Oh well, it would be. It's a big Irish film, and
funny.
Presumably, cost a reasonable
amount.
Other
big films from Ireland that could have, you know.
Use the money. Well, I mean, it was a relatively safe bet in terms of it
Let's
was a popular...
Let's pause here and insert John Connors' rant from the IFTIS.
Yeah. But I mean...
Everyone bless yourselves.
Like, to be fair, in defense of it, and I can't believe I'm going to argue in defense of it because I'm the only one who's seen it and you should not go see it. But in defense of...
I've heard
of,
it's worse than the Emoji Movie.
No.
All right, because I heard from someone it's worse than the Emoji
It's
movie.
Worse than the Hardy Books movie. The Hardy Books movie is just grand at best. But this is the thing where you take a television property and you wed it to a road movie. Like, say, the Hardy Books movie. Like, say, what's it called? The Muppet movie, even, for example. Like, it's a good template, but it just does nothing with it. It's a bunch of people hanging around. There's a fun fair. There's some travelers. Suddenly they're in Wicklow. Why does anybody care about this? And it's not funny. It's all tired
Certainly
and exhausted.
Nobody cares about Wicklow.
Harsh.
It's a burn.
Yeah, take that. Wicklow, you are unnoticed. All right, then. But yeah, I can argue giving it money because it's a popular Irish television show and making the leap from film
when?
To
When was the last time you saw Republic of Telly?
That's why they gave it to them.
When was the last time anyone saw Republic of Telly? That's where it originated from, wasn't it?
Yeah, but but Damo and Ivor is its own TV show and it's a phenomenal
TV show. Oh, God, it is. I forgot about that.
Yeah, it is a phenomenal
I blacked
popular
that
TV
out.
Show. And I mean, so I can see
what
the...
channel is it on?
It's on RTE
one
or two.
Yeah,
I feel like this is a whole joke I'm just not aware of.
I felt like they thought,
you know what, Mrs. Brown's Boys a couple of years ago did very well.
Yeah,
it did.
Maybe Damo and Ivor will do the same.
Well, I imagine that's the logic behind it. And Hardy Books also turned a profit as well. Like, so I can see the logic behind it. I just, it's not a good movie. And, you know, it's not a good concept. And it's not funny. And it's tired. And it takes jokes.
You have to sit through it.
It takes jokes that are obvious. And then it explains to you why they're obvious. And not only that, it takes jokes that are obvious and it pushes them in a cruder and crasser direction. It's not a good
movie. Almost like being on Twitter.
Yeah. But and then at number five, a much better comedy, Game Night.
I have not seen it. I'm really annoyed.
It's
still
really
haven't seen it either.
No.
It's like I'm gonna be honest.
I've seen its cousin.
Blockers. You saw Blockers, but we'll talk about that when we get to the new releases this week. But yeah, Game Night is great. It's very nice, very fun. It's very high concept. I mean, it's not the best movie in the top 10. We may be landing on those in a moment. But it is enjoyable, and it is fun, and it is, you know, worth seeing if you're looking for something to just take your mind off, switch off, and enjoy a broad studio comedy.
We're definitely having a upsurge of adult-related game things, game-themed films with Tag. I don't know if you guys saw the trailer for that.
Yeah, the trailer for that was out this week. Also from
Game
Warner
Night,
Brothers.
And now Blockers is coming out soon. So yeah. It's weird.
Well, I mean, this probably ties back into the infantilization of adults that we were talking about there, where, like, are adults basically kids these days? Which has been a recurring theme of, like, studio comedies, like Step Brothers being probably the best example of it. Like, so I feel like adults playing silly children's games is just an extension of that sort of, like, premise. But I think Game Night does something vaguely interesting with it. At number four, it's Lady Bird, which is still performing phenomenally well, which is
wonderful.
Good.
Lady Bird.
It really is, and it's great to see it doing so well here. And at number three, it's Black Panther.
Also excellent.
Which is also very worth, it's very happy to see it doing well. Yeah, and I mean, it's pacing phenomenally. Like, if it were making as much money abroad as it was in the US, it would be as big as Titanic right now. It looks set to eclipse both of the movies. Yeah, it's just phenomenal. It's a force of nature, and again, astounding that it took so long for this to get made. At number two, it's a new entry. It's Tomb Raider, which is grand. It's
good.
I've not seen
it. It's good. It's better than the original. It's not original.
Is it better? It's a better movie. It's more sincere. It's more thoughtful. Yeah. You can tell somebody like thought about it. But is it more fun?
The Angelina Jolie movie was quite fun.
It was fun. It was tongue-in-cheek.
It really leaned into a lot of the stuff from the games.
A young Daniel Craig.
Yeah. But
playing an American.
Nah. It was, and then a young Jared Butler playing...
And Ian Glenn playing the villain.
Yeah, yeah. Was Jared Butler not in the sequel Cradle of Life?
He was. He was in the second one. That's what I mean.
Okay. Probably a good call. But, Tomb Raider is far too serious. It is
very serious. It takes everything in earnest.
The issue with Tomb Raider is that it's a video game movie written by somebody who thinks the cutscenes are the best parts of video games. It opens...
It's based largely on the reboot.
The new ones, the 2013
which I also thought was too serious.
Yeah, that's the thing. It is them. Mm-hmm. And it is so much them, and the fact that you will notice several times that, hey, I remember that scene in the game. Hey, I remember that scene in the game. Hey, I remember playing that scene in the game.
But I mean, Vikander's charming. Vikander is incredibly... And
you can see why everyone seems to fall in love with her. Yeah. The only person she doesn't have chemistry with is someone she really should have chemistry with in the film. And I even got to interview the guy...
Donnie Yen?
No, that's not his name.
Oh, no.
No, Donnie Yen is...
Somebody else.
Ip Man.
Got to interview one of the stars. He's in Into the Badlands, which films here. I interviewed him, was it Dan Chu? No, that's terrible.
Better edit this, Niall.
Yeah, Niall.
Or we'll never get an interview again.
He's really good in this.
I'm consulting the fact machine as we speak.
We have it here as well.
Yeah, I bring the fact
machine. You're amazing.
It's portable.
It is portable. It fits in your pocket. You're talking about Daniel Wu.
Daniel Wu.
Okay, so you were talking about, you interviewed Daniel.
Daniel interviewed Daniel. He was great fun.
Daniel interviewed me.
Yeah, I feel like he looked
like you were going to say.
He looked into my soul.
He's very interesting, very funny, very funny guy. And he said he had a lot of fun on that set. This is a lot of action. And apparently Alicia Vikander is scarily intense when she deals with her stunts, because she went full throttle with everything to the extent where they were worried about her.
Ah, that's good. It's good to see that sort of commitment. Mm. It's not good to put yourself in danger for your stunts. Leonardo DiCaprio, you have been warned. At number one, another new entry, Peter Rabbit.
Oh, dear Lord.
James Corden conquering the world.
This is a kids' movie effect, though. You know, like, there's kids' movies do spectacularly well in Ireland all of the time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because you have to take the kids to something. And Easter's coming up.
And there's a lot of kids.
St. Patrick's is right there. So you've got the break going on at the moment. We've got this whole thing going on. So it's a perfect climate for a children's movie to succeed. Yeah, so no, Peter Rabbit is... You've seen it, right?
Yeah. Saw it weeks ago.
And what'd you make of it?
I really liked it.
It's charming, isn't
it? It's really charming.
I mean, Daniel said the same thing about it.
I know people have a hate on for James Corden, but if you ignore him, like, there are other characters that are really great in this. Daisy Ridley is in this. Elizabeth Debicki, Margot Robbie,
Donald
Gleeson is maybe the funniest he's ever been. He is so funny in this.
I'm trying to think, the only alternative is About Time, and that's not really funny.
Yeah, I keep hearing that.
Yeah, you should not watch About Time. You should bump that below Baby Driver on your
It's a really funny film. It has It has incredible slapstick comedy to it that is genuine, like is really well earned. There is one scene that like where Donald's character takes on Peter, and like he's fighting him in this glass room. And the fact is, there's nothing there with Donald, so Donald had to do all of this by himself with nothing in his hands. Yet in the film, he's clearly having to fight a rabbit. It's fantastic.
Well, I mean, that's a lot of fun. That's kind of stock for doing a big budget film these days, is that you have to be able to act against a green screen and a tennis ball.
You never meet your
There's
tennis
no
face.
Green screen in the film. There's no okay, real green screen.
You know what I mean? You have to act against a tennis ball or whatever. Like, I think that's par for the course, though, in modern acting.
Would you call this a big budget film?
What? This is a reasonably big budget film. Yeah. Like, it's got a CGI James Corden. It's, you know.
Okay. Just try to. I know people are doing it, but like, just try and see past James.
I never said any. I actually don't mind Corden. I don't mind Corden as much as most people do.
Just imagine white noise whenever he talks.
He's the main character in the film, though. That's quite difficult.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's move on then, and let's get past our James Corden issues and talk.
I have no James Corden issues
that are coming out this week. So opening this week is Mark Felt, the man who brought down the White House.
Has anyone even seen this film?
Well,
this
film, I wanted to see this at AJ when it clashed with something else.
A clash with the breadwinner for me, anyway.
I think it clashed with one of the Hong Kong movies I saw. Our Time Will Come.
But it's obviously, as the title implies, the story of Deep Throat. They obviously couldn't use the title Deep Throat.
Is this a fictionalized version?
It's not, well, you say fictionalized version.
As in, like, you have somebody playing him.
It's not a documentary. It stars Liam Neeson. It stars Liam Neeson, Tony Goldwyn from Scandal as well.
When I saw it, I was like, so who's he going to kill?
He's going to take back the White House.
He didn't willingly kill anyone in The Commuter. Mm-hmm. It was
circumstances. Yeah, oh, come on. He threw a guy at a train.
But he was forced to.
He was forced to, damn it.
The Commuter is one of my guilty pleasures of the year so far. I'm quite curious to see Mark Felt.
Like
it does have a bit of the smell of failed Oscar bait about it, if we're being honest.
Oh, yeah.
This is a movie that, if it were better, would probably have been released like January or December, mm-hmm. and you'd be looking at Liam Neeson pushing for a Best Actor nomination. So I am a little bit suspicious about that, and the fact that none of us have actually seen it.
I didn't hear about it until I looked it up. Like, when I was on the Scan On release dates, I was like, okay, what's coming up? What is that?
Yeah.
That's literally what happened. I was like, hey, it's Liam Neeson. I've never heard of it.
And then, also opening this week, which also generated some controversy, I don't know if it's screened here in Ireland, I certainly am not aware of it, but Proud Mary.
Oh god, yeah, this poor film just seems like it was completely buried.
What's Proud Mary?
Proud Mary is the Taraji P. Henson film, yeah. It's where she's basically like a female John Wick, is how it's been pitched.
Oh, yeah. That's right!
It didn't
I've seen trailers, but like I've never seen like a release date.
It's weird, because even I remember reading about it when it was supposed to be coming out in the States, and there seemed to be very little promotion, very few theatres.
Yeah.
Like, it was just sort of there.
Yeah, it didn't, it didn't screen for critics either as well.
There didn't seem to be any support behind it whatsoever.
Which is surprising, because apparently the reviews are it's not great. But, I mean, you look at movies that do screen for critics that are terrible, and you wonder, like,
people still push them.
Yeah, and this one seems to have just disappeared, which is a shame, because Taraji P. Henson is great.
Mm.
It also has a great cast, including Neil McDonough, Xander Berkeley, and Billy Brown, who are, like...
I know. I love Neil McDonough.
They're all like, you know,
that's
like
B movie.
What's the word? Character actors.
I love Neil McDonough.
Serious support behind.
I always remember him being the Bruce Banner in the Hulk cartoon.
Okay,
Band of Brothers, Justified.
And he was very good in Panda Brothers.
He was M. Bison in the Chun Li film.
Yes, he was no Raul Julia.
He was not.
A few memorable appearances in the X-Files.
He was also in Legends of Tomorrow.
Yes,
and Arrow.
In the final season.
He's the villain in Legends of Tomorrow right now.
Yeah,
he's brilliant.
Well, he was. Yes, he was. Yes, Damien Dark.
He still is Damien Dark. He's back.
Cool.
That's great.
Also opening this week is Disney's A Wrinkle in Time, directed by Ava DuVernay, which is interesting. I've seen it. Graham, have you seen
it? No, I'm the only one. I think, did you see it? I haven't seen it. No, I unfortunately could not make the screening.
Hugely controversial film adaptation in several respects. I've seen it. It's very good. Well, okay, it's good. It has some very serious problems, but it also bristles with wonder and imagination.
How is it controversial?
It's controversial in several respects. First of all, you look at people online who are railing against it because of its message of diversity, the fact that it changes the race of its lead characters. The fact that, and this is the particularly like galling one, right? Which is that when the book was originally released, it was modeled on Madeleine Langell, and I apologize for mangling her name, her beloved children's novel from the 1980s, which preached a sort of a certain Christian ethos. However, this was frowned upon by certain mainline sort of Christian sects. Because it was deemed as relativist. It was deemed as inclusive and not like purely holy sort of, holy, if that makes sense, but holy Christian in value. So it was seen as controversial among Christians when it was published in the 1980s and 1984. However, what DuVernay does is she tones down some of that Christian themology. And what you have then is you have the same people who reacted so aggressively to what they perceived as the relativism in the novel in the 80s are now complaining that, oh my God, they're taking Christianity out of this film. And you're wondering, how do you possibly satisfy those people?
You don't.
You don't.
You can't. Everything that it
you
does
make the film, film, and then just hope it works.
There's always going to be a certain caliber of person who takes exception to something because it just...
The highest,
match what they want.
Yeah, the highest budget movie directed by an African American woman. It's beautiful. It's
that's
stunning.
What we should be talking about.
Yeah, it is absolutely stunning.
I guarantee you there are people on the internet talking about that, and I guarantee you it's not in the positive.
Yeah. But it looks wondrous. It's
Ava DuVernay's career progression is fascinating to me because even I was reading about her recently, and the fact that she just decided one year that she was going to make a short film, took a bunch of her own money, and just made it, and that was her kind of on her path to stardom. I'm just like, this is wonderful. This is like purely inspirational.
It is. And the fact that she sort of jumped between doing narrative films and doing documentaries and like obviously Selma and 13th, which are both fantastic films. And then she jumped from doing that to doing something which is populist and sort of blockbustery like this. And the fact that she turned down the opportunity to do Black Panther because she felt that it would impinge on her creative freedom.
She even had a conversation with an interviewer that she would never do a Marvel film, a Marvel superhero film, or a Star Wars film. She didn't want either. Like, she was asked which one or the other. And she said neither. And it was very interesting. And then, just this week, it was announced that she's directing New Gods, which is a DC film.
Well, I mean, like, the really exciting thing about that, though, is that it has the possibility of cultivating a relationship between Warners and DuVernay in the style of their work with, say, Kubrick, Eastwood...
Say who you want to say.
And Nolan. There you go. And obviously, what?
Nothing. It's just, you know, a little plug for the book.
Nobody knows the book exists, thank you, Graham. But yeah, so, and also, Nolan, and even Woody Allen back in his peak. This idea of taking a director, which a studio does, and using the old studio system where you make one for you and one for us, and we trade that way, and we're looking not necessarily towards the immediate weekend box office return, but we're looking towards having a sustainable long-term relationship where 35 years down the line, somebody will buy an Ava DuVernay box set, and we will have most of them. And, like, I mean, I feel like that's great, and I feel like that's an approach that benefits somebody like DuVernay, who is an incredibly, like, a filmmaker with an incredible array of attentions, who's willing to do, like, Oscar bait, who's willing to do prestige pictures, who's willing to do documentaries, and also do blockbusters and crowd pleasers as well. Like, I feel like you couldn't think of a director who's more better suited to that model. And I think that's fantastic. And finally, the last big new release of the week is Pacific Rim Uprising.
Fans of Pacific Rim.
I loved it. I love Pacific Rim. Has anyone here seen Pacific Rim Uprising yet? You've seen it?
I've seen it.
See, this is great. We should have people on, like, Pacific Rim on more often. He sees stuff. What do you make of it?
It's not as good as the first one.
I mean, I don't
know. It would be hard to recapture the first one.
The director of the first one, it's
lost.
An Oscar.
If I'm being honest, it lost its heart.
Yeah.
That's what made it so great. Is that it's lost a certain... Now, John Boyega is brilliant in it. Scott Eastwood is Scott Eastwood, so you get that, whatever you... Take that however you want. He's the same character.
Star of Suicide Squad.
Scott Eastwood is the same character in every film. Well, I've never seen him not be a soldier.
In Gran Torino.
Is he in Gran Torino?
Yeah, his father cast him as a white guy appropriating black culture.
I don't think he's the longest ride.
Ah.
Could be wrong.
Oh, that's the
film that only I remember.
Yes, and also sounds like, yeah.
Unfortunate title, really, for the market, but anyway.
Yeah.
It's a good film. It has odd, like, in my eyes anyway, themes of that will remind people maybe of Starship Troopers, which I really liked.
Oh, that looks... Well, there's your selling.
But only one or two, I will say.
But Starship Troopers is amazing. In the Pacific Rim universe.
Yeah, like, Steve Tonight does add... Like, but
does it have Neil Patrick Harris?
No. He might be one of the kaiju.
Do they do a song and dance number or perform magic? The bit where the kaiju dazzles them with card tricks.
Magic.
That really catches everybody.
It's good. But again, I much prefer Pacific Rim. And I think it's because, I don't know, like, there's just something ineffable about the fact that I can't properly articulate what it is that endears me so much to Pacific Rim, yet not to Pacific Rim Uprising.
It's a very pure movie. Yeah. Like, everything
it knows what it is.
Sincere, but also, like, the heart of that movie, like, nobody is winking to the camera, there's no cynicism in it, and the message at the heart of it is very simple. It's like, just join together, take care of each other, fight for a better future. You know,
in this they do the same thing,
but that is its charm.
And it's also Del Toro, who has Del Toro just has an infectious sort of energy.
Yeah, infuses everything with this kind of fairy tale enthusiasm. Mm.
Even say Blade 2 or Crimson Peak, which are not necessarily good movies, but
Crimson Peak is amazing.
I love both of them, but I think if you were to break them down and say objectively speaking,
Blade 2 is well better than Blade.
We'll have a conversation about
that. The Reapers or Reavers are such an interesting design as a vampire.
I'm more making the point that Del Toro is a director who infuses his films with an energy and joy and verve.
And that is and you can feel that it is missing in large sections of this film. It's more straightforward. And when it's more straightforward, it feels more like a Transformers film at times.
Yeah, well, that's disappointing.
Not that bad. Not as bad, but you do feel like you could mix this up with another.
All right, so it's time to wrap up, but in the meantime, if people are looking to read some more, get some more exposure to your views, where can we find you guys online? So, Graham, where can we find you?
I'm on Game Air. That's my gaming website. I'm at Graham Geek Era on Twitter, and I'm on Skanon.com. Where you will see that I've got a ton of reviews, still a lot of reviews still coming out that haven't. Yeah, that's it. I could not end that well.
Cool.
Mine is very succinct. I'm only on Twitter, but I'm off Twitter for Lent, so if you go looking for me right now, you won't find me. But I'm at Pixie Grace if you want to find me after.
Yeah, sort of build the hype. Yeah. It's like an event.
There will be a return.
There will be a return.
Jesus in someday, Mary Magdalene, he does return.
And someday I will spruce up my website. Cool. Someday.
You can also find me online at Darren. I host a movie podcast called The 250. I'm at The Movie Blog. And I've also written a book called Opening the X-Files, which you can buy online at Amazon.
I will point out, Darren and I are on Speaking Geek soon. My podcast, which I also forgot about, and we're talking about Ava DuVernay for pretty much the whole thing.
For an hour or so.
Yeah, pretty much.
And also, Graham will be popping up on a special two-part 250 episode covering...
Oh, that's right! That hasn't come out yet.
That hasn't come out yet. Covering My Neighbor Totoro and Grave of the Fireflies. That will be out in April. And
that was a weird day.
It really was. It's better than drugs.
The agony and the ecstasy.
Yeah, it's better than drugs. Anyway, you can check out Sin Aaron, the Scanon magazine is out at the moment, published pretty much single-handedly by Niall this month. They're fantastic.
It's killing him.
It's amazing, though. He's got a wonderful
way too enthusiastic.
He's got a wonderful section compiling notes on film base, which we're still very sad. We're still sort of hurting
very
about.
Bittersweet.
He's got comments from people who worked there and sort of memories of the place, and it's very worth checking out. It's available free online. You can find it on Scanon. You can find it by googling it. Anyway, we'll be back next week. But until then, take it easy, guys. Bye.
Bye.
I never forget the first moment when I walked in Kyo Cinema. I was hooked from there on.